We welcome you to Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba Through the Hour, talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. Here's our toll-free number. Want to talk with Zorba? Call 800-462-7413. And Zorba, what research have we for our listeners this time?
Tanners, people who go to the tanning booth all the time. Are they addicted? We'll talk about some interesting research on that. And a new gadget to help fight obesity by the people who make pacemakers.
A pacemaker for the
tummy. The tummy. We'll see whether or not it works.
Coming up along with your calls, what's our recipe?
Cold crab and cucumber soup. And guess what, Tom?
It's cold?
It's cold. That's right. It's cold. It's in the title, and it's in the soup.
Okay. I should have known it was cold from the title.
Yes, you can tell from the English. It's cold. Cold crab, not hot crab.
Let's change the topic. Let's go to the phones and welcome a caller. A listener with us now in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
How can we help you?
Well, I don't know if this is so unusual or not, but I have an extra hole in my nose.
You have an extra hole in your nose?
Well,
wow.
Yep, yeah, and I could go on Jay Leno on stupid human tricks.
I've
had about a half an inch diameter hole in my septum.
Oh,
And it's been there. I noticed it starting about 8 years ago, and it's just grown and gotten
inside. Is it in the middle between the other two holes?
In my nose, probably about half inch up in my nose.
Yeah, how did you get this? Do you know?
Well, I have no idea. The doctors say there's usually three reasons: drug use, or too much nose spray. And I've not done or had any.
No, those are actually it. Cocaine use is one of the reasons. Well, you'd know if you were a cocaine user.
Yeah.
I mean, you would know that. Too much nasal spray is a really, really excessive thing, and then injuries will often do it too. Do you have diabetes? Do you have or any other medical problem? Any other health problems at all?
No, but I can sure whistle a good tune.
You can sure whistle a good tune. Do you have trouble with mucus, by the way?
No.
Okay, good.
But it does bleed a little every day.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Because with it being moist in there, it won't heal up.
Right, it doesn't heal up at
and
all.
And my main concern is there are long, if I don't get it fixed, all the doctors are saying, you ought to get that fixed.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't get it fixed, is it affecting my quality of life in my breathing or in my lungs?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't affect your quality of life or breathing in your lungs. Your nose has a purpose. It does a bunch of things. It warms the oxygen in the air that goes into your lungs. So it's a warming valve. That's what it does. It initially warms it. Very important when it's in cold weather. It adds a little moisture to what we breathe in, so the moisture is still added. It's necessary for us to be able to taste and smell correctly. It has lots and lots of purposes. In terms of that. But it's not going to cause any problem. Often the problem is mucus and bleeding. And there are a couple of options. I have one patient, for instance, who has an artificial button. In other words, it's never healed on him. And
I've had that put in.
What happened when you had the button in there? Did it get infected?
No, it didn't really get infected. It was irritating.
Right, it's irritating. So he had to have three or four buttons until he found one that worked. And basically, he has had the present button in probably for 7 or 8 years, and it hasn't caused him any problem. But he had to go and get the button restructured one way, restructured the other way, because getting these things to heal otherwise it doesn't always work. If they recommended an artificial cartilage, or where they take cartilage from another part of your body and try to get it to heal?
Yes, they did suggest that, where they put the cartilage in there, then they would just stretch some skin from inside my nose up and reattach it up over the hole.
Yeah, what'd they say the chances were of success?
Well, I never talked to them about that.
Because the problem is these are often chronic infected areas, and the chances of success are nowhere near 90%. I'm not sure what the present chances are, but there certainly is a chance of failure because of the chronic infection that's there. But getting back to your problem, you're not doing yourself any harm.
Okay.
If it bleeds a little bit when you get up in the morning, you can deal with it. You put a little Vaseline or something in your nose, and you keep it under control. That may be the way to go.
Will it get bigger?
Has it gotten bigger in the last 8 years?
Yes, it grew from just a pin size to a half inch, but it doesn't seem to have gotten any bigger.
How long has it stayed at this present size?
Oh, I'd say Several years, three or four years.
Yeah.
3 years, maybe.
Yeah. You know, what I would do if I were you, A, I'd watch it. Mm-hmm. B, I'd consider another button to see if that works. Mm-hmm. Because C, I don't know whether or not the surgery would be useful. And if I were to have the surgery done, I would only go to somebody who does at least 10 or 20 of these a year. And
okay.
You may have to go to a specialized university-type site, but you want somebody who really does a lot of these because this is a specialized surgery.
I do a nose ring. With a little,
Tom would do a nose ring
a little
on the inside
maybe?
Of the nose.
I could definitely do a big, yes. big nose ring.
A big nose ring, that's right. Tom would be very excited. He's ready. His eyes have lit up on the nose ring issue.
What about my sense of smell?
Well, you still have it, don't you?
Huh?
You still have your sense of
yes.
smell? Well, then enjoy it.
I didn't know if it would lessen.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. If that were going to happen, it would happen now. So.
Okay.
And if you do the ring thing, send us a pic.
Yeah, there you go. The jewelry option, not just the plastic surgery.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for your help.
Appreciate the call at 800-462-7413. A listener joins in now, Zorba, in Deming, New Mexico. Hi.
Hi. How are you, gentlemen?
Really, fine. Really good.
What's up?
Well, I've got to give you a little history first.
Mm-hmm.
When I was about 2 years old, I had a boil inside my ear.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor, in his infinite wisdom, decided not to lance the boil.
Okay.
And when it popped, it blew a hole in my eardrum.
Oh, wow.
Ooh.
And between my senior year and my freshman year in college,
mm-hmm.
I had an operation called a tympanoplasty with a vein graft.
Okay.
Well, that did not succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And every ear specialist I've gone to since then has his own pet theory about mm-hmm. why it didn't succeed.
Mm-hmm. Got it. So you still have a hole in the eardrum.
Yes.
The hole has never been totally fixed.
No.
Okay. And you had one surgery when you were in high school.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm with you.
And so I've become very adept over the years that when I take a shower, I don't get any water in that ear.
Oh, I bet you're totally adept.
Yeah.
In fact, you could teach the class on how to, yeah, how
right.
to keep water Probably. From getting into your ear. Oh, yeah, I'm
well,
sure
you can. Well, my concern is, how do I clean it out?
Why do you want to clean it out?
Well, I would assume that it gets wax in it or whatever.
Well, I don't know. How many years have you been doing this? How many decades? Let me change that. How many decades have you been dealing with this?
Five
decades. Yeah. Okay. You've been dealing with it for 5 decades. Have you ever had trouble with wax? Have you ever said my ear's plugged with wax?
No.
In 5 decades?
No.
Give it up. You don't have your ears fine.
Huh?
After 50 years, if your ear is not filled with debris, believe me,
seconds.
It's not going to be filled with debris. You are doing a great job. And you probably have a little moisture that's coming through there that's keeping the wax from forming. If wax were forming and were a wax issue that was going on, then you'd have a problem. But no, I would stick to whatever you're doing. You know, whatever you're doing is right. After 5 decades of dealing with this, you know, with this dang thing, I would just continue to do it. You're doing a good job. As I said, you could teach the class.
Okay.
How's your hearing?
Well, my hearing in my other ear is like 10% above average.
Oh, great. Wonderful. How's your IQ?
My IQ's fine.
Why are you asking that? Obviously, he's a public radio listener.
Really
his IQ is
that's
great.
That's beside the point.
No, I'd sleep on.
Especially my wife.
I'd keep on doing what you're doing. No, the only reason when you said 10% above average, I just got back from a whitewater rafting trip. Wonderful whitewater rafting trip with one of my good buddies from high school, who's a really, really smart guy. He's kind of a genius. I mean, he's got an IQ that's stellar. And he told me that in fourth grade, they did the IQ test, and then the teacher seated the children in the classroom
by
based
IQ?
On the IQ.
Oh, my goodness.
With the smartest kids in the front. And the kids with the lowest IQ in the back, and there were 40 kids in the classroom.
Oh,
so he was in the front left-hand side, and I thought, well, I supposedly have an 85% IQ.
Right.
I would have been way in the back.
You don't have an 85 IQ.
Hey, that's what it said in fourth grade. When you said 10% above average, that's what it reminded me of. Anyway, keep doing what you're doing. Don't worry about debris in your ear. And frankly, if you've gotten along this fine, I probably wouldn't do anything either.
All right.
You know, because you may not ever get any hearing back, and the fact is you don't have chronic infections. You're doing a good job. Enjoy.
Thanks for calling us at 800-462-7413.
You know, 10% above average hearing, you wonder whether or not other parts of his ear and brain took over because the other ear was not doing that well and increased the hearing.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he probably was very careful throughout his life to make sure his other ear was fine.
Let's get to the research. You say we may have a new addiction worry about?
Tanning. Do you know people who are addicted to tanning?
No.
Well, they're not public radio people. No. There are people who I know who go to tanning booths all the
time. Right, but whether or not that's an addiction, we'll talk about the research.
Is it addiction or habituation? Well, there's some issues about it. So in Wake Forest University, they did some research, and they believe that tanners may get something which we could call an endorphin hit. When you're feeling good, when you jog, when you take heroin, when you take cocaine, when you go to a sporting event and you really like things, all these things basically elucidate an internal hormone called endorphins, which we think is a hormone, sort of a neurochemical hormone which comes from the hypothalamus in the brain and makes us feel good.
So just like smoking something that's illegal, we get an urge to go to the tanning booth?
To keep on doing it. And so what they basically did was they try to block these pleasurable sensations with a blocking agent. It was a neurochemical blocking agent to see whether or not it would make a difference with tanners or non-tanners. And then they put them in tanning booths, and they did them intermittently. So you need to have UV light in order to cause a tan. So they had booths that looked like a tanning booth, those blue kind of lights. Some actually had UV lights and some weren't. They were just fluorescent lights to see whether or not the tanners would notice a difference. Some had the blocking agent, some didn't have the blocking agent. Lo and behold, they found that a tanner could tell the difference in a particular bed whether or not it had the UV light or not. Now, they didn't wait long enough to induce the tan. Otherwise, you'd look at your skin.
In other words, every
other or every third time, they were actually getting a blue bed. And the tanners immediately didn't like bed number three. They liked bed number four. So they could actually have the sensation and tell that they were getting the ultraviolet light that gave them the feeling that they were being tanned. Right.
So now this is
and when
this
it was blocked, they didn't make it.
So here's what needs to happen. We've talked about research that shows that tanning can be harmful.
Absolutely,
over tanning can be harmful.
You bet.
So we need to pass some laws.
Yes, we
making
need to pass
these
some laws.
Tanning
that's
places
right,
illegal.
Right. Pass some laws,
and then
right.
I can see that's illegal right. tanning booths
that's right.
showing up.
That's right,
like crack
that's
houses,
right. like crack houses. That's
sneaking
right, sneaking in there. You got
neighbors
it.
Neighbors calling
you
the
got
cops,
it. That's right.
Breaking
that's
down
right.
the doors,
breaking down the door. That's
arresting.
Right. You've got the illegal tanning beds there. You got it, baby. You've got the illegal tanning beds there. We're not going to let you tan in those tanning booths. And you know these people who sheepishly come out and get in their car and they're sort of covered up, so you don't realize they're tanned and they're covered.
Cops spotting him on the street.
Right.
You've been
That's
tanning.
Right. That's
been...
right. Especially in the middle of the winter up north. They'll know. They'll know based on what you are. You've got the whole thing. We can just go get those laws passed nationwide.
Okay.
Just like crack cocaine, you can't tan. It makes you feel too good.
Great research. 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. A listener now with us in St. Louis, Missouri, Zorba. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Well, how can we help you?
Well, I don't have nearly as interesting a problem as those other folks.
Of course you do.
Where do you have a hole that you don't want?
I love your show. I try to listen every week.
Thank you so much.
I am 60 years old, and I'm about 5'6". I weigh about 126, 127. And I've always been like a yoga and speed walking. Mm-hmm. I hate to run because I get shin splints. But I started a new exercise program called Krav Maga.
What's it called?
It's called Krav Maga, and it's Hebrew for contact combat. And it was originally, I looked it up because I knew you were going to ask me.
Yeah.
It was
Thank
originally
you.
Designed for the Israeli fighting forces, and then they went to police and military and a lot of our military. And they've just started offering it to civilians. And a lot of the other people in the class, most of them are younger. All the women are younger than me. And
you're the grandma. Are you the grandma in the class?
I am.
You're the grandma in the class.
And they always say, she's 59 years old, and I'm 60, which is hard to say. And I hate it when he says that. But but they're very nice and very helpful and supportive, and I've loved it. But I'm just curious about that intensity level. I mean, obviously, I've been doing it a while.
Well, let's ask you a few things. You smoke cigarettes?
I do not smoke.
Okay. You have heart disease?
I do not.
Good. You have high blood pressure?
I do not.
Okay. So, I mean, you're relatively, you're healthy. You know, you're a 6-year-old healthy person. Have you exercised before, been on a treadmill or exercised on a treadmill before recently?
I'm not much for machines. Like I said, speed walking, yoga, that sort of thing.
Yeah, most people can go to 80% of their maximal heart rate without any problem. If they have high blood pressure, previous heart attack, and so on. Then I recommend that they be screened by their doctor before they start a program. But if not, I think it's okay to start this thing and see. You know, the way you can tell is just do some speed walking. Get your heart rate up to 80% of your maximal. The way you calculate that is a simple formula. 220 minus your age.
Uh-huh.
But the real issue is now, do you have direct contact with the martial arts section? Are you doing that direct contact?
Yeah, there is the martial arts section.
Well, you're 60. That's an issue. When you're 18, direct contact doesn't hurt as much.
You use pads. You're not really doing a lot of combat. It's not like taekwondo or karate mm-hmm. where they have a public or events or the sparring. There is some of that. I don't do the sparring. I don't do the boxing. I don't let anybody hit me in the head.
Good. Good.
But there is pads you use. You do work with partners in order to learn how to do that. And you do work some one-on-one, but they're pretty safety conscious.
Yeah, working one-on-one is good. Getting smashed or hit in your shoulder or somewhere else at your age is an issue. Now, it's, 60 years ago was older than it is now. And then people say, well, it's not really older. It's the same age. Well, obviously, it is the same age from birth. But the average person 60 today is much healthier than the average person 60 in the 1950s, 60s, 70s, or even 80s.
Right.
And there's good data that shows that clearly show that people who are 60 are much healthier than they used to be. However, the ability to take a punch at 60 is much less than at 40 and at 20.
Right.
And that's the issue. So you want to protect yourself from that. So
well, I watch it, but I love. I mean, I've had more fun.
Sure, it gives you energy.
I thought I'll try it a couple of weeks, and I started going about three times a week, and now sometimes I go five times a week. And
having fun is part of it.
It's a good social thing.
Absolutely. And you get to, and very importantly, you get to socialize with people of different generations in our society.
Yeah.
One of the places in life that I will never be in is a senior citizen retirement village where all you do is see people 55 years of age and older, because they don't have the chaos of young people, nor do they have the sort of bright, sparkly things that you see with people who are younger. And people who are younger also like to see people who are older. That interaction is really what sort of nourishes all of our psyches.
And don't you think when we're senior citizens, we're going to be doing yoga and Krav Maga and eating tofu?
Sure, absolutely. And that occasional steak. So good luck to you.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. We appreciate it. 800-462-7413. To Bozeman, Montana we go now. Hi.
Hi, good day.
Yeah, what's up?
Tom and Zorba, I wanted to give you a call because I was listening to your program, and there was some mention of both of you being a little hair challenge, such as I.
Yes, yes.
In other words, getting a little light on top.
Yes, you bet.
So I thought maybe you could help me settle a little debate between myself and my wife.
Sounds perfect.
Because
I love
I know
debates.
That you're good
makes,
at doing that
I love
also.
It. I love it. What can we do for you?
Well, my wife keeps suggesting that there's got to be some type of a product out there that stimulates hair growth so that I can look a little better than I do right now. Go back to my early youth, I guess.
Uh-huh. Well, there's no product that actually stimulates hair growth, except there are two products in the market that may work. There's Rogaine and there's Propecia. Rogaine is a topical product over the counter without a prescription. It works especially if you're a younger guy and you put it on your scalp. And for some guys, it works. It does change it. And Rogaine can also work for women. It's been approved by the FDA for men and women. And it has some modest results. The same is true of Propecia. That's only for guys because it changes the sex hormone, testosterone, the byproduct of testosterone that seems to shut off the hair follicles. And that can maintain hair growth. And there's some studies that show it may actually improve it slightly. Those are the only two products that have been shown and FDA approved. And believe me, the other products on the market do not seem to do the trick. So,
is it something that you would take and then you have to continue to take?
Absolutely. In both cases, you have to do them forever. They don't just stimulate growth and then you stop using them. If you stop the Rogaine or the Propecia, the hair advantage that you may have received then stops at that point.
Oh, well, that doesn't sound good to me.
It doesn't sound good to you, but it may sound good to your wife.
But your wife doesn't think bald is beautiful?
No, apparently not. And in fact, all bald is even worse than just having a little bit of bald.
Did I settle this argument? What was the argument? Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, she seems to think that there is something out there that's going to give me my hair back, and make me look like I did 20 years ago.
There we go. Well, I would recommend that you get a photograph of yourself 20 years ago, that you put it in like a 10 by 12 or something like that, and you make a little mask, and you put that on your face, and you say, hi, honey, here I am. This is how I used to look.
Does she look now like she looked 20 years ago?
Oh, of course, Tom.
Ah!
No
right
debate
answer.
On that.
Right answer. Right answer. Thank you for your call.
Appreciate
there we
it.
Go. Exactly.
Zorba, quick listener tip before our recipe. A few weeks ago, we had a caller on who had a toenail fungus. He didn't want to spend a fortune on that prescription
That's
drug,
right.
which I will not mention on
That's
the air,
right.
which has that terrible, the worst
right.
commercial on television ever.
You mean Lamisil.
Oh, you had to mention it.
With little things eating underneath the nail.
Great
marketing.
So our listeners chimed in with a cheaper alternative.
Okay.
A majority of them suggested Vicks Vapor Rub.
Oh, wow. I've used it for everything. I use it on my peanuts. If I'm growing peanuts, I use Vicks Vapor Rub to help prevent
apparently
syphilis
it works
and
on toenail fungus.
It works on everything.
Evelyn in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin. Yeah. Said she's tried both that terrible product with the ugly commercial and Vicks Vapor Rub. She claims it's Vapor Rub. You're
V-A-P-O,
right.
Vapor Rub.
Yeah, it's it says Vapor Rub here, but you're right.
It's Vapor Rub.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't the Vapor though kind of hints at vapor because of the vapors?
Vapor Rub.
But you're right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Thanks. She claims both were effective, but the Vapor Rub. Was about $75 cheaper than the
Well, it's a great home remedy. I think I'd try that, see if it works. You know, I've never seen any studies that look at it, but sure, try Vicks VapoRub. It will be cheaper. Vicks VapoRub. I'll try it. I'll put it in my medicine
Thanks
chest.
To all of you for that suggestion.
I love, by the way, Vicks VapoRub when I have a cold. I put it in my nose.
I haven't
chest.
Had any of that since
reminds,
I was 9 years
reminds
old.
Reminds me of Mom.
I, don't
I only
want
buy
any
the
of
name
you.
Brand. I don't buy the generic when it comes
if
to that.
If you have a tip to share or just want to save our listeners some money, we want to hear about it. Send us an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Our recipe coming up and more of your calls here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our toll-free number again, and a good time to call us right now, I think, 1-800-462-7413. Zorba, let's do some soup before we get back to the
Cold crab and cucumber soup.
A cold soup, cold crab and cucumber soup.
So do you like crab?
Not that much.
I love crab. I love crab and lobster and seafood and all kinds of seafood. Shellfish, I love escargot, everything. Anything from the sea, I love.
That's very good.
I love, Do you like cucumbers?
Yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, you like at least half the soup. So. Yeah. Okay, we'll talk about this. Here we go. Start out with two medium cucumbers. You have to peel them, seed them, and chop them. So get rid of the seeds.
So peel, seed, and chop. Yeah. Two medium. So, isn't that hard to seed cucumbers?
Not at all. Not, I'll tell you, it's very simple. What you do is you cut it halfway. First of all, you peel them. Really simple, right?
Take a potato. Yeah, that I can see would be simple.
Cut it lengthwise down the middle, and the inside is filled with seeds. Take your fingers and just dig them out.
Oh, yeah, okay.
It takes a second. You do them under the sink. It is like the easiest thing in the whole wide world.
Oh, okay.
Then you chop it up. Two medium yellow peppers chopped.
Two medium yellow bell peppers chopped.
Right. 2 cups of honeydew melon chopped into a one inch cubes.
2 cups of honeydew melon chopped into 1 inch cubes.
So now think about these flavors. You've got the flavor of a cucumber. Not a lot of flavor to cucumber, but a little flavor.
It tastes
very interesting.
Cucumbers
I like
good.
To. You've got the pepper flavor, and now you've got a little sweetness in there too.
Yeah.
2 tablespoons of shallots, green onions, finely chopped.
2 big tea of green onions, finely chopped.
A jalapeno pepper.
Oh, jalapeno pepper.
Chop it. If you want it spicy, leave the seeds in. If you don't want it spicy, take the seeds out. Yeah. It won't be as spicy.
So
remember,
little,
the seeds carry
kick
the
to
heat.
This,
you
soup.
Bet.
Yeah, okay.
Kick is good. Half cup of low-fat plain yogurt. Good taste. Low-fat plain yogurt, much better than cream, which was traditionally used in cucumber soups. 3 tablespoonfuls of fresh lemon juice.
Well, the yogurt doesn't taste better than the cream.
No.
Better for us.
Better for us,
yeah.
That's right. I think yogurt tastes pretty good, I do like cream.
3 big tea of fresh lemon juice.
That's right. And if you don't use the fresh, use the frozen. Frozen is really good, much better than the reconstituted stuff that's in the green bottle.
Right.
1/2 pound of crab meat.
Half a pound of crab meat.
That's right. Frozen crab meat or fresh crab meat, much, much better than the canned crab meat. Tablespoonful of extra virgin olive oil.
Big tea, extra virgin olive oil.
2 teaspoons of white wine vinegar.
2 little tea, white wine vinegar.
3 tablespoonfuls chives, finely chopped to garnish.
3 big tea of finely chopped to garnish chives.
That's right. And salt and pepper to taste.
S&P.
That's right, S&P. So in a blender, puree the cucumbers, yellow pepper, honeydew melon, shallot, jalapenos, yogurt, and lemon juice. In other words, put it in the blender and blend the whole thing. Got it?
Mm-hmm.
Add the salt and pepper tasted. Pour it in a bowl, cover it, and chill it for at least 4 hours, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you've got this wonderful thing. Then, in a small bowl, combine the crab, the olive oil, the vinegar, and toss it. Put a little S&P, taste it a little bit. Divide this crab marinade into 6 bowls, mounding it in the center, and then ladle the soup around it so it kind of floats to the top. It's the way it looks. Presentation is very, very important. Really, I think, makes it
this
difference.
This would be good. I'm not a huge fan of crab meat, but I think this would be good. I think I'd like this soup.
I think it's great. Now, I want to talk a little bit about this. I'm making this into 6 bowls, okay?
Okay.
120 calories. If you want it as a meal, you can make it 3 and 4, and it's going to be roughly 200 calories.
Right.
It really is a low-fat, low-calorie soup. I think one of the things we have to do in our society, because we have become an obese country, is to look at portion size. So, you know, really, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I'd make this and I would say it serves 4 or it serves 2.
Right.
And I would ladle it into a bigger bowl. I think we have to get used to having wonderful tastes in smaller amounts and being satisfied with it. That's why I divided this into 6.
This is a cold soup. I would assume with the melon in there, we couldn't really heat it up.
No. It's a cold soup. You wouldn't have this hot. Yeah. You don't have. I've never had hot cucumber soup. Cucumber soup is great in the summer. It's great in times when it's hot, when it's warm. I mean, I happen to love cucumber soup. I will often make it even colder by putting some ice cubes in it and then blending it up at the end. Not with this soup, because this soup is a little bit creamier from the melon. The melon makes it creamier. The low-fat yogurt is good. This is a great soup. Yeah. I would try it.
And we're happy to send you this recipe. Just address your request to Zorba Pasture on Your Health, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, zip code 53706. Be sure to include a self-addressed, stamped, business-sized envelope. We'll stick the recipe in that and send it back to you.
Or come to our website at zorbapastor.org and you can pick up that recipe, other fun stuff, and come and look at some photos of Tom and I having a great time.
Back to the phones we go at 1-800-462-7413. A listener now, Zorba, in New York, in Manhattan, New York. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Fine. How can we help you?
Your show.
Thank you.
And thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Pleasure.
I'm a chef in New York.
Oh, cool.
And about 15, 20 years ago, I was made aware of a food additive that was then being added to scallops.
Oh, really?
The name of the additive is, in the industry, it's called STP.
STP.
Its chemical name is sodium tripolyphosphate.
Uh-huh. To preserve it or something like that?
Well, it sort of appears as a preservative on an ingredient list. However, the purpose of the additive is to increase water absorption.
Water absorption of the scallop.
Product that it's been added to, so that a 1 ounce scallop might weigh 1.5 ounces.
Oh, I see. You can then get more for your scallop.
You get more for your, well,
but
you're buying a larger scallop. However, in the cook, you lose the water.
Huh. Oh, in the cook, you end up losing the water.
Yes.
I see. So when you cook it, the water actually disappears from the scallop. That's fascinating.
Yes, it does. It comes out in the pan, and it makes for an extremely difficult sauté.
Oh, that's very... So is this...
you can't sauté in water.
Are all scallops... How do you know whether or not that's in the scallop that you purchase?
Well, I've been with this so long that I know when I'm dealing with a scallop that's been dosed.
That's been
recently,
dosed.
You know, I've seen this appearing in shrimp.
Mm-hmm.
I know that it appears in bacon as well.
Wow.
Because, you know, in the kitchen I'll sauté a large amount of bacon, and in a very short while my pan is full of water.
Oh, that's fascinating. Mm-hmm. That's fascinating. And, you know, I must tell you something. I didn't know anything about this. I do quite a lot of reading on food and food additives. I didn't know anything about STP. I'm sure that I've seen that as an ingredient because it sounds familiar, but I had no idea that companies are doing this to sort of boost the weight of their product with cheap water so that we end up spending more money and getting less for our money.
Yeah.
No, that is an injustice. But the really awful problem, and my question to you in a medical context, is this. Does the effect of the chemical continue to work when after it's been digested?
I would say no. And the reason is our body is great at breaking down chemicals. Now, I don't know how it breaks down sodium triphosphate, but it breaks it down. Chemicals are broken down, A, by enzymatic destruction in the small intestine. So a lot of chemicals never make it into the body. And if they make it into the body, either the liver through something called, through basically liver enzymes, through transferases, or the kidneys, you know, take these chemicals and excrete it. The liver is really good at excreting most chemicals. And it wouldn't necessarily have the same effect on us that it may have on a dead scallop. Now, because it's different. You know, it's working on a scallop. A scallop has been killed. It's dead. It's there. It's not active, and it doesn't have active transport, and it's simply sitting in the solution and then taking it on. And that's not unusual. We know that if you have a certain amount of salt in a water, that it'll either take water out or put water into something that's sitting there. So I don't, even though we're absorbing it, whether it has any harm is something the FDA and the USDA looks at all the time, but it's not going to make us inflate. No, they're getting bigger because they're eating too much.
Yeah, at the least, though, this is a cheap trick on
Well, this
the
is
American
a cheap
consumer.
Trick, and it's very interesting. I mean, I have to do a literature search on sodium triphosphate and then find out essentially more, and we'll talk about this at another date on
Excellent.
The show and do some research on this.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Appreciate the call from New York. 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. To Duluth, Minnesota we go. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. What's up?
I have a question for you both.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard anything about the Sonoma diet?
The Sonoma diet. I have heard a bit about the Sonoma diet. I've been to Sonoma, but I've never dieted there. But there are lots of spas in Sonoma. Tell me about it.
It's more about portion control
and
eating a balanced diet.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of whole grains,
vegetables, and fruits and veggies, right? More vegetarian type diet. I mean, from what I've read about it, it's a great diet.
Okay.
If you look at that diet along with other diets, they fit more with what I call a Mediterranean diet, mm-hmm. which are more whole grains, nuts, more fruits and vegetables, less on the red meat, of course, less on protein. And if you go to the Mediterranean pyramid, if you Google Mediterranean pyramid and look at the Mediterranean pyramid, it's a great pyramid. It's different from the regular food pyramid, and it works.
Is this a diet where you have to buy products from somebody?
No, it's not.
Where you have to go to meetings?
Nope.
See, you can sell. Tom does not want to go to a diet. Tom does not like to go
so
to those
meetings. So you just read about this and then you follow the whatever the guidelines are.
Yeah. Do you go to Sonoma to a spa to start the diet? That would be nice. Wouldn't that be nice?
That'd be all right, yeah.
I also have another question.
Okay.
How important is it to see your doctor before you start a diet like this?
I don't think it's important at all. I don't think you have to go to your doctor before you start a diet, not in the least. I mean, if you're a diabetic and you're on some sort of a diet, I think you've got to run that by a physician.
Or I should go to a doctor before I start the diet I'm on half
That's
of the
right.
Time.
Yeah, that's exactly it. No, you do not have to get – you don't have to get permission. You don't have to go to a doctor. There's no reason to do it. If you have major
Another
medical
burger,
problems,
please.
That's right. Another burger, please. That's the Tom Clark diet, another burger. Another slider. From White Castle, please. That's what it is. He buys them by the gross when he goes in there. So 144 White Castles.
Yeah.
Anyway, no, I don't think you have to see your physician before that either.
Okay, well, thank you both.
A pleasure.
Appreciate the call at 1-800-462-7413. To a listener now, Zorba, in Somerset, Kentucky. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help you?
Well, I was driving back from Lexington, and I heard your show for the first time, listen to public radio.
Oh,
and
well, thank you.
Norman
thank
was
you.
Talking about aspartame. Mm-hmm. And my own personal experience is that when I've ingested aspartame, I've gotten headaches.
Mm-hmm.
Either through diet drinks or if it's mm-hmm. in some sort of flavored drink or whatever. And I wondered if that was common. I didn't hear any discussion about that, and I wondered if you'd heard of it before, if that was common among people, and what you thought.
You know, first of all, there's a lot of stuff that goes in a soda drink along with the aspartame. And aspartame is not, I don't think it commonly causes headaches, but it might cause a headache for you. You know,
right.
So I definitely would stay away from that. But I don't know, you know, I mean, if you were really interested in know if it was the aspartame or not, the simple way is you buy NutraSweet separately, not in a diet drink at all. You take some water, put it in water and drink it down and see whether or not it gives you a headache. Aspartame are two amino acids that are linked together. It's protein. It's basically
right.
a very, very sweet protein, different from Splenda, which is a sugar that's then been modified, which is the other sort of biggie on the block. Now, were you drinking it because you want to keep your weight under control?
No. It started in the summer. I used to do survival trips for adjudicated children.
Oh.
And one of the treats
cool.
they started giving us was like a fruit-flavored punch, you know, a little powder.
Sure.
And,
sure.
of course, back in those days, I was much younger and healthier.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you've exerted yourself all day, you've drank water, you're on a mm-hmm. no red meat, mm-hmm. low sugar, low salt diet. And so in the evenings, the kids and the staff as well, we would mix this fruit punch in our water bottle or orange flavored
sure.
drink or whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
And I would drink it. And after the first two or three days, I noticed I was getting a headache every night,
uh-huh.
and I mentioned it to one of my co-workers, and they said, "Well, I've heard that this stuff has NutraSweet in it, and I've heard that NutraSweet causes headaches."
Yeah, I don't think it's really if NutraSweet,
not a common thing.
If it were common, we'd know it because you know lots of people drink drink aspartame soda, but once again. Check it out for yourself
I've actually tried diet soda since then, and I do get a headache.
But you always put it in your...
me. I just wondered if it was common among other people, if anybody else had heard of it.
As I said, individual not common. Now, I have a question now. So when you drink your diet soda, do you put it in the canteen first now before you drink it?
No. I just usually put it in a glass. Not being out in the woods, there's no need for the canteen.
Just checking out.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much, Norman.
Yeah, we appreciate the call. They should call. I have a soda called that. Used to be aspartame soda. I wonder how that would sound.
Yeah, right. Right. There you go.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. On a recent show, Zorba, you and I were trying to figure out the difference between a masseuse and a massage
yes.
therapist.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, Rick in Coeur d'Alene,
yes.
Idaho, wrote in to shed some light on that. He writes, a masseuse is, by definition, a female. A masseur is a male.
Oh.
They're both French terms, mm-hmm. of course. Mm-hmm. We knew that. For massage mm-hmm. therapists.
Mm-hmm.
Calling every massage therapist a masseuse would be like calling anyone who serves you food a waitress.
That's a gender-specific term.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay.
It's like
massage
radio,
therapist.
We're hosts.
That's right.
And every woman who's on the radio is a hostess.
A radio hostess. I don't think so. A TV hostess. How about an anchor on the news? Is it
an anchoress?
And an anchor? Yeah. I don't think so. A doctor and a doctoress? No, I don't think so. I think we'll just leave it as masseuse and masseur. Thank you, Tom. Well, thanks for that.
And thank you, Rick. We'd like to hear from you. Send us your comments, tips, and stump the doc questions too.
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have fascinating research coming up and more of your questions too here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our number again, 1-800-462-7413. Zorba loves to hear from and talk with you and always has great advice. 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before we get back to the phones, you mentioned pacemaker for the tummy?
There we've got it.
The newest thing
to fight obesity, and that's a pacemaker in your stomach to make you sort of think that you're full.
Does it work?
Well, right now it doesn't work. But it's not a bad idea. I mean, it is a good idea.
It sounds like a fascinating idea.
One of the issues that we have with obesity, I mean, let's face it, 40% of Americans are now obese. And frankly, everything that we have tried has limited success. Call it the Atkins-Schmatkins diet or go to Weight Watchers. No matter what you do, it works for some people. It doesn't work for other people.
Right.
And there's nothing that's been universally good. And this is something they're looking at.
If this is something that doesn't work now, why are we talking about it?
Well, because the initial research showed it didn't work. It doesn't mean later on it's not going to work. This is a pacemaker to the tummy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what this does, the idea is that it's a battery-powered gastric pacemaker. You have little wires that go into your stomach, and you have the pacemaker either inside your body or outside your body connected to the wires. And when you eat, the wires then begin to affect the stomach's contraction and slows down the emptying of the stomach. And by slowing down how quickly the stomach empties, you feel full longer. So in other words, you eat the food, your stomach kind of bloats up a little bit, you feel like you're satisfied.
It kind of slows down the digestive process.
Yeah, so let's say it takes 20, 30 minutes for your stomach to empty. If you calculate it the right way, it might take 2 or 3 hours for the stomach to empty, so you may feel like you're satisfied for a longer period of time. Not a bad idea. Theoretically, it works. In an actual situation, it does not work.
I'm just wondering why it doesn't work. I mean, what it is that's not now wrong.
Well, it's very obvious that appetites, that how we eat, our appetite is multifactorial. It's not simply due to how much your stomach fills up. It's not just due to visually what you're looking at. It's not just due to where the satiety centers are in your brain, which we haven't yet discovered. It's due to a sort of a complicated relationship with all of these, and we haven't figured it out. We do know, for instance, that the tube, not the gastric bypass, but a little plastic tube that goes around the stomach that you fill with saline so that your stomach, you know, stays, is basically smaller so it feels full. We know that stops appetite. This may sort of be another methodology, but, you know, it's a complex thing.
I didn't know
about
that tube thing. Is that better than having the operation to promote?
Well, no, this is a type of operation, which is a tube that goes around the stomach and basically causes a ring. And when you want to feel more satisfied, you put more saline in the ring and the pouch becomes smaller.
Well,
but in that case, you're limited.
This pacemaker sounds,
it sounds
really
good.
Neat.
Medtronic, it's a company that made pacemakers, is working on it, and I think it has some potential. The real issue is portion size. Reduce the portion size, and you may reduce the weight.
800-462-7413, again, our toll-free number. And Zorba, a Black Creek, Wisconsin listener with us now. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
How can we help?
Well, I have a question,
mm-hmm.
and I'm hoping maybe you can answer it or help us see a little light here.
Sure.
Our son was diagnosed with type 1 juvenile diabetes.
Okay, so your son was how old?
12 years old.
12 years old. And that's the diabetes which happens to generally young children. It can also happen to adults, and they need insulin. It's not the same as adult-onset diabetes.
Mm-hmm. He's insulin-dependent. Mm-hmm. He basically was diagnosed out of the blue. It does not run in our families.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have obesity. We don't have, you know, we're very active lifestyle. He's a voracious basketball player.
Okay.
Never overweight, a healthy baby. I can count on my hand how many times he's been on antibiotics since he was born.
Gotcha.
I mean, that's,
gotcha.
You know, nursed him,
gotcha.
Never had ear infection.
Did everything right. And
yep,
he's an active kid. So why did he get the diabetes, right?
Well, yeah, and right now our specialists through mm-hmm. Children's, who are phenomenal down in Milwaukee, have told us, well, it's nothing you did. They said it's viral.
That's exactly. That is the present theory, is that this is an autoimmune disease.
Exactly.
And what happens is a virus comes in and might be like a cold or a sore throat. We don't know much about it. And our body develops antibodies to the virus, which, by the way, has never been discovered. And that virus then basically has a similar membrane structure, if you will, to the islet cells in the pancreas that produce insulin. And so our body destroys the virus and it destroys the islet cells in the pancreas and bang, we have diabetes. And the way we find this is that it tends to occur in epidemic proportion in certain groupings, especially in children. And it looks like a viral disease. it looks like a viral disease and how juvenile diabetes develops. And it's a shame, but they're exactly right on key. This is an autoimmune disease for which we have not yet discovered the virus. Because if we do, we may be able to immunize our children against diabetes, which would be awesome.
Well, and the other thing, you know, I asked them about this. I said, why aren't there, you know, vaccines or why isn't there screenings? Or, and they said they're so close to the cure that the money is going into the cure versus to get a vaccine off the ground. It would take so much.
Well, I don't think I agree with that analysis. I don't think nobody has found the virus. So I think if there's a vaccine that we were close to that was developing, you better believe that a drug company would be interested in that because you're talking about $1 billion a year product. So, I mean, it's a rather important product. It's not just government money that goes into these. It's pharmaceutical money. And if they get close to something that they think is going to be $1 billion product, they bring it forth. I think it's that we're really far away from that. Nobody quite knows why this autoimmune response happens. We know that if you give cyclosporin, which is a drug that we give for kidney transplants and liver transplants and lung transplants, that you can turn around a diabetic. In other words, a new onset diabetic, you give them cyclosporin, which basically gets rid of some of the antibodies and their diabetes disappears. But then they're on cyclosporin, which is not a good drug to be on. The insulin turns out to be better.
And there are tests right now that, you know, we can go into being a newly diagnosed with TrialNet. But we kind of hedged off them because they do take a toll on your immune system.
Absolutely. And there's no, and, you know, once again, this is an attempt to tamper down that immune system and see whether or not you can make some of your own insulin. I think there's a lot of money going into insulin transplants, a lot of money going into drugs. It's a big, big issue because the health toll of diabetes is probably $20-30 billion in the country. But I don't think that there's less money going into immunization. I think we're just farther away. People have been trying to develop immunization for HIV/AIDS, right? Why can you do it with certain forms of pneumonia? Why can you do it with certain forms of something called PCV7, which are for some forms of ear infection? Why can you do it for meningitis? You can't do it for AIDS. Believe me, there's a lot of money that's gone into AIDS immunization, and we're not any closer than we were 10 years ago. So it's just a difficult problem.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling.
Good luck with your son.
Indeed. 800-462-7413. A listener in St. Louis, Missouri joins in. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
How can we help you?
Good, good.
I wanted to ask your opinion on something, just your perspective. I wanted to know what you think about cleaners in the home, chemicals in the home, and how it can affect people.
Well, we know that a tremendous amount of air pollution is caused by chemicals in the home. The estimation is that it's 1/4 of all the air pollution or 1/2 all the, I mean, it's a lot. It's not a small amount that are caused by the chemicals that we have in the home. When we open up the bottle and we smell those chemicals, that goes into the environment and affects the ozone layer. And we also know that when the Environmental Protection Agency has looked at the home air environment, home air quality versus outside air quality, that a lot of people do not have very good home air quality. They've got mold, they have dust, they have mites in the environment, and they have chemicals because they're doing all this cleaning. So it is an issue, and it's probably an issue with some people more than others, and we've never had a good handle on to how to develop it and deal with it. You know, so how to get a toxic-free home is a whole topic in itself.
Okay, so what do you think about that? How would a person, let's say, go about getting a toxic-free home?
Well, one way to do it is to use fewer chemicals. Mm-hmm. So limit what you use. In other words, instead of having 20 cleaners in the house, have 5 or 10 cleaners in the house. That may be one way because each cleaner has a different smell and a different odor.
Do you mean don't stockpile? Is that what you mean?
Like, well, don't. If you stockpile, it's one thing. I mean, if it's in a closed container, it's not in the environment.
Don't clean the house.
Don't clean the house. That's Tom's method. Just stay away. Just have a dirty house.
Yeah.
And then you'll have no problems at all. You know, I don't know. I have not looked and found a website that looks at toxic-free chemicals.
Okay.
You know, there are a variety of companies that are out there that are selling, quote, toxic-free chemicals, but I don't trust that. You know what I would do? I would go to consumerreports.org. That's the first place I would start. I like Consumer Reports, and I would look at their home cleaners, and the reason is they have also looked from an environmental point of view, and I would look through their environmental point of view. I like them. I think they do good work.
What
and
about
that's
where air I would go. Purifiers?
Well, the issue is not really that we purify the air. The issue is that we open the air and it's got a chemical in the air. And when you do that, you should make sure the windows are open so the chemical gets out. Yeah. So I think I'd go to consumerreports.org before I would trust what they would say. That's what I do as a good consumer. Yeah.
And thanks a lot for calling us at 800-462-7413. Let's see now, Zorba, if we can help a listener in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi there.
Hello.
What's up?
How are you?
Good.
Well, I've been having a pain in my elbow recently, and it comes on real suddenly and usually lasts for about 5 or 10 seconds.
Okay.
And it's like a stabbing pain.
Huh.
And then my hand, as a result of this, kind of goes numb.
Mm-hmm.
I can't make a fist I can't hold on to things.
Uh-huh. Because of the pain? Is that why it is?
I'm not sure. It just has an effect on the whole lower part of my arm.
What sort of sports do you engage in? Do you do any sports at all?
Not anymore. As a high schooler and young girl, I was a gymnast. And then I was a full-time gymnastics teacher up until about 6 months ago.
Okay. Was it related to the gymnastics that you did at all? Did you feel like it was related to that?
No, not at all. It's actually just started probably within the last 2 or 3 months.
Uh-huh, okay.
And doesn't really happen when I'm doing anything active.
Does not seem to happen when you're doing anything active. It seems to happen otherwise. What about when you're working on the computer at all? Does it bother you when you're working on the computer or doing any computer work at all?
It has.
Mm-hmm.
It's like happened once or twice, but it's happened once or twice doing a lot of things.
Doing a lot of things. Okay.
Yeah, even driving a car or walking.
Well, one of the things that I would look at, first of all, the issue is whether or not this is either something that might be carpal tunnel syndrome that's occurring in the wrist, or is it tennis elbow occurring in the tennis, where the extensor muscles are, rather, in the forearm. And one way to do that is to try different splints and see if it goes away, if it can just settle down over time. So you can buy a tennis elbow splint at a sporting goods store, and it's a little sort of a Velcro thing that goes around the elbow. I'd wear that for a couple weeks, see if it goes away with that. If so, you've got your answer.
Mm-hmm.
It's from the muscles in the elbow. And if not, then I would wear a wrist splint that you can also buy at the sporting goods store, and I'd wear that for a couple of weeks and see if that makes a difference. I have carpal tunnel syndrome. I've had surgery on one hand, not on the other, and I'm going to need surgery on the other hand because now it's waking me up at night with this sort of sensation, and it bothers me at night, and that's why I got surgery on the first hand, and about 3 or 4 years ago. So I would try the wrist splint for carpal tunnel. I would try the tennis elbow splint on the elbow, and I would see which one works. Do not try them at the same time, because then you won't know if one works versus the other one.
Okay.
Okay?
That sounds great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Good luck.
Let us know what happens.
Yeah, we appreciate the call. And Zorba, thank you,
too. A pleasure, Tom.
For a copy of this week's recipe and all things Zorba, visit us on the web
at zorbapastor.org.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's produced by Adam Friedrich. Our executive producer is Charles Monroe Kane. Brad Kohlberg is our technical director. Gigi Holland fills your recipe requests. Our theme music is by Ben and Leo Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll be with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0630Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at zorbapastor.org. That's zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.